Good morning and welcome to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, your host of this very fast-paced half hour of special topics and special guests designed to help you realize your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia, serving the entire Washington, D.C. metro area with clients all across the country. If you'd like to know more about OF&P, visit us on the web at www.ofplaw.com. Also, if you'd like to make an appointment with one of our attorneys, call us at 703-218-2100. I also invite you to subscribe to my blog, blueprintforwealth.org, where you can find audio, video, and written articles on topics of interest in tax, estate planning, and business planning. Today, we're going to talk about where you live, or at least where the state governments think you live, and we're going to talk about the concept of domicile or residency. State governments are more than ever struggling to meet their budget deficits, but the legislators often find that raising taxes and cutting programs just aren't the best ways to get reelected. Instead, many states have found new ways to plug holes in the budget, increasing revenue through heightened audit enforcement, for example. And what better way to get revenue than to go after the high net worth individuals who are the corporate jet owners or others who may be construed as being high net worth, and they claim they don't even live in the state. Indeed, those folks don't even vote in the state elections. But increasingly, state governments are turning to their own state tax departments and empowering them to mine their database of high net worth individuals and look for residency targets. Now, there are two basic ways, at least in the local states of Virginia, Maryland, D.C., and even Delaware, that an individual is determined to be a resident of that state. Different jurisdictions have different rules, but like I said, in the local states, residency is the most important concept. The taxing structure for residents is really simple. Residents are taxed on one thing, everything. If you qualify as a resident of the state of Virginia, for example, Virginia has the authority to impose taxes on all of your income, regardless of its source. Non-residents are only taxed on income with a source in the state. As we're going to talk about today, states have some sort of mechanism to ensure that taxpayers get credit in their home state for taxes paid to other states on certain types of income. But often these credits may not be sufficient to relieve the individual from double taxation. Now, like I said, there are two basic ways in which residency is established. The first test is if you're quote-unquote domiciled in the state. If so, then you're taxable as a state resident. Many states use this same definition, so it's really important to understand what domicile means. It really refers to one's principal, primary, and permanent home, really where you intend to be. And the test of intent with respect to a domicile depends on where your place of habitation is, where your permanent home is, with the range of sentiment, feeling, and permanent association with it. In other words, where are your things? Where are your valuables located? If they're in your residence and that residence is in the state, then you're deemed to have a permanent place of residence in the state. Over the years, to help auditors figure out where somebody's permanent home is located, there are factors that have been developed for determining residency. These factors are the focus of residency audits in almost every state tax audit. They include your home, where you're actively involved in your business, the time you spend in that location, near and dear items, where you keep them, and where your family is located. When you're planning a move outside of your state of residence, taxpayers need to be sure that most or all of these factors weigh in favor of their new home state. All of these factors, we often find the time factor is the most important and instructive in domicile cases. If a taxpayer doesn't spend more time in their claimed home than in any other location, the auditor is going to have questions. In audits, they're looking to demonstrate that the taxpayer spends more time outside of the home or in the home than anywhere else. So it isn't always determinative how much time you spend, but it is an important factor. Taxpayers who steer clear of the domicile test aren't out of the woods because Virginia, Maryland, D.C., like many other states, has an alternative test for residency, the statutory residency test. If you maintain a permanent home in the state and you spend more than 183 full or partial days in that state during the year, you're going to be deemed a statutory resident. Over the past year, there have been many cases in and outside of our local jurisdictions highlighting problems and difficulties that can arise in these statutory residency cases. On the number of days issue, there was a recent case in New York involving the noted hedge fund manager Julian Robertson. And it's high-stakes poker. In the matter of Robertson, the issue concerned the taxpayer's location in or out of New York City over the course of 2 days during a particular tax year. Why was that important? Why were those 2 days important? Because if he was deemed to be a New York City resident during those 2 days, then he would have had an additional $26 million tax bill. I've heard advisors referring to other factors that are important in determining residency or domicile, such as where you have your voter's registration card, or where your driver's license was issued, where you keep your bank accounts, where your safe deposit boxes are. These and many other factors are important, but may not be determinative in determining domicile. But a court will be influenced, for example, if you claim to have Virginia residency, but your driver's license is issued in Delaware and you haven't bothered to change your driver's license. The auditor and the courts will be interested in finding out why you haven't changed your driver's license. Now, if you're at an age where changing your driver's license may be difficult, then that's a good explanation supporting why you may not have changed it. But voters' registration cards, bank accounts, safe deposit boxes, all of those things and many other factors are important, if not critical, in helping bolster your case. But remember, the most important factor, as we indicated before, is where you maintain that permanent home and how much time you're spending in that jurisdiction, whichever one that you're trying to claim as your domicile. Be careful of potential contradictions that can arise where you're either very cheap or simply not paying attention to the details. For example, I've seen situations where somebody has claimed a change of residency outside of a state, but nonetheless applied for that state's fishing or hunting license to save a few bucks on a registration fee. I've also seen people claim tax relief under a specific program or property tax exemption that might be available in their former state of residence simply because they want to save a few hundred or thousand dollars. But when it comes down to it, where do they really reside? Try to identify any registrations or exemptions that you might have based on some sort of residency exclusion and make sure that all of your exemptions and all of your registrations are consistent with the facts that you're trying to claim in your case. Make sure everything gets switched, in other words. Some taxpayers brush aside dual residency concerns because they're under the impression that double taxation is constitutionally prohibited or that states have credit mechanisms in place to restrict double taxation. This is a mistake. In fact, double taxation in the residency area is all too common. How does it happen? The main problem is created by the state's tax credit mechanisms. Despite what many people believe, states won't provide a credit for any and all taxes imposed by other jurisdictions. First, the credit is generally limited to residents of that state. So if a taxpayer is a resident of the state, the taxpayer could qualify to receive a credit for taxes paid to another state. But here's where the issue gets trickier. Many states limit the extent of that credit. New York is a good example. In New York, residents are permitted to take a credit for any income tax imposed for the year by another state on income derived from and subject to tax under New York law. So New York provides a credit for taxes paid to other states only to the extent the income is sourced to that state under New York's sourcing rules. So if a New York resident pays tax to Wisconsin because the taxpayer worked half of the year in Wisconsin, then New York will provide a credit for the Wisconsin tax because under New York's rules, the tax was properly payable to Wisconsin because the taxpayer was working there. But if the taxpayer ended up qualifying as a Wisconsin resident and was taxed on all of his income, including income from interest and dividends and capital gains, then New York wouldn't give a credit for the Wisconsin tax paid on those items of income. So residency for income tax, estate tax purposes, is an important consideration, but you just can't make generalizations or assumptions regarding whether or not you're a resident of one state or another. If you need help in determining your residency status, give us a call at OF&P at 703-218-2100. I'm Wayne Zell, and you're listening to Blueprint for Wealth.